Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So here we are back, almost by popular demand. If you can count two... Well, if you can count two tweets as popular demand, two to... Actually, we've had more than that, but two today.
That's a lot for today.
Just one day.
Midweek, though, innit? People always... They don't know what to do with themselves midweek, so...
Well, Anthony 59 has sent one saying, how's Ruth? Just
Is his name Anthony, like...
I presume his name
K-N-E-E. That's clever, that.
Yeah, I presume his name's Anthony, but he calls himself Anthony 59, who just asked, how's Ruth, basically?
Wow.
And Richard Joy.
Living the dream.
Richard Joy, who Radio 4 put a thing out there saying, what podcasts are you listening to during lockdown to assuage the pain of lockdown? And he mentioned our podcast, which is nice of him, especially as we've not been doing it.
Yeah.
It was extremely... In fact, it's almost as popular when it's not on as it is when it is on.
Perhaps even more because people are pleased that it's not constant.
No, that's true. Anyway, so he's kindly done that. But for people who are wondering why we're not doing it, or we haven't been doing it, and I can see entirely from your point of view, is that when you're at uni or you're out at college, you're talking about general stuff.
Well, to be honest, I used it a lot to catch you up as well. We really didn't speak that much in the week at all. And even less, I didn't really speak to Mum. Barely at all. Like, I wasn't a massive one for phoning home every day and keeping you really up to date. So I genuinely was telling you about stuff, whereas now I'm living at home. I'm also not really doing heaps of stuff. Because I'm, like, doing the normal stuff, which is, like, seeing friends and going out and stuff like that, but nothing to really inform on. So it just seemed kind of...
Well, I know you like... No, you're probably right, because I know you...
So welcome!
Yeah, well, but we're back now. Well, the reason is, I would say, we did the lockdown sessions where we talked about being locked down and the agony of that for you as a young student, as a teenager. So we did that for the lockdown sessions. Now we're in a sort of a midway point between absolute lockdown and, if the scientists are right, the second wave of the coronavirus... And if they're not right, I'm not going to believe anything that scientists say in the future. So
I don't think that should be a go-to. But
you know, well, that's my view on it. But anyway, so at the moment, you were sort of out and about a wee bit more than we were when we did our last podcast, which was the lockdown sessions when we were totally locked down. Be about a month ago, but I can see
that was when you really couldn't do anything, like you couldn't even go for walks or anything like that.
That's right. And I was trying to persuade you to do a podcast, but then I thought, well, no, you don't like to get too personal. And at that point, the only thing that you had was the personal life, you didn't have
any
public life.
Yeah, I don't know, like sometimes I don't like the idea of having, which is it's such a ridiculous thing because it's like I live in this generation where. You can really build like a huge picture of people without even knowing them. And I think like the more you put out, and I'm not saying it's even necessarily a bad thing because I would never say anything online that I wasn't all right with people hearing, but people then fill in the blanks for themselves. And like, and obviously this barely gets any listeners. And so I can't imagine how...
Excuse me.
No, but like,
thousands.
In comparison to someone who has, 30,000 Instagram followers or a huge YouTube following or something like that, like it's not really anything.
29,000 Twitter followers, I'm just saying.
But it is that people can start to fill in their own gaps and then people meet you and like, I don't know... You probably have never experienced this because you've never
been... Well, podcasts didn't exist when I was your age.
Not even podcasts, but just like you didn't really have... Especially when you were meeting people. So like,
microphones had only just been invented when I was your age.
As soon as I would meet a boy, I would instantly go on, oh, what's he got on Instagram, what's he got on Facebook? And then you can build this whole picture of someone. Someone gives my name, one Google, into...
And you're on the whole thing.
I mean, I don't know how often people actually do Google people, because I would never Google someone. I think that's quite weird. But so it is. I don't know. I think just being in lockdown and stuff, it does make you think about like how much stuff you share.
Yeah.
I guess because you become quite introspective, because there's not so much anymore, because I'm able to leave the house. But at the start, I think it was. Mm.
No, so I say I fully understand. But people have asked how you are. You know, every now and then we get a Twitter saying asking how you are, and I always say truculent.
Truculent. It's not
very nice. No, but I always do tell them, or try and explain why you've not wanted to do the podcast. But anyway, we're doing it again now, so that's the good news.
Playing hard to get. That's what it is.
Have you heard of the expression a Karen? Calling somebody a Karen.
Yeah,
it's a new one on me.
Really? I've not heard that. Mm,
but apparently there's a podcast called No Country for Young Women where they're talking about women not being Karens. And a Karen, I'm told, is an American term for pushy middle-aged women who do not acknowledge their social and racial privilege. Which is interesting, because for a number of years before I met your mother, I did go out with a girl called Karen, and I never thought of her as being particularly privileged or pushy or anything like that.
She wouldn't have been middle-aged, would she?
Not then, but she now is a middle-aged Karen.
Well, maybe she is a Karen. You don't know.
We've not been in touch. But it is interesting that they use the word Karen. Whether that in America...
I think it started off as a joke. Mm. And it's that specific, like, hairstyle, you know, like a sweeping.
And is it just white women are called Karen, black women, it's not a black person's name?
And it's just a name that a lot of... I think probably Janet, my mum's name is Janet, but Janet is the equivalent of Karen.
The British equivalent of Karen.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think the name is quite as used over here.
No.
But... I think Janet would be your equivalent name.
So your mum is a Janet.
Well, no, she's not a Karen, but she is named Janet. But you know, my mum has a group of three other friends, and like three out of four of them are called Janet. Like it's quite unbelievable, really.
Yeah. She said that Sophie Hagen, who I do know, she's a Danish comedian. I don't know whether you've ever seen her.
Yeah.
I've actually seen her live. She's quite funny. But anyway, she's large woman. She
is
said,
that relevant?
Yeah, it is, because a lot of it, very relevant, because a lot of her comedy does refer to that. So I feel...
But is it relevant to this story?
No, it's not relevant
to
this story.
Well, there we go then.
But I thought, I was just trying to point out, in case you didn't know and you'd seen her on the live at the Apollo, you knew which one it was. But anyway, she said, Sophie Hagen, that white women should, quote, shut up if called out for behaviour that others deem racist or problematic. She said, when you're called out, you're meant to be quiet, you're meant to take it, you're meant to learn. Then you can say, thank you for educating me. It's going a bit far, I would have said.
Yeah, I think that's, some of these things, I understand the concept behind it, and I think she's absolutely right, but some of those jargon work things go a bit far for me. And I can't remember what it was, but someone said stop saying sorry for being late, just say thank you for waiting for me. And if someone said that to me rather than sorry I'm late, it would not be well received.
No,
I think who puts it actually better, Shauna from South London in the Winter Love Island, Dad.
Ah, of course you're watching Winter
I'm
Love
watching
Island.
Winter,
right.
Winter Love Island. So
this was the one that was on just before...
First of all, the producers of Love Island basically predicted this pandemic situation by having a Winter Love Island. But that's by the
by. Knew.
They knew.
This is your conspiracy theory.
It's not
Were they in cahoots with the Chinese? Then did the Chinese...
If you have, just so much solid proof, is something even a conspiracy theory?
Yeah, it's still a conspiracy. Basically, if it's on the internet, it's a conspiracy theory.
I don't even think anyone's put this on the internet.
So this is just your theory?
Well, I mean, I'm sure someone else has said it.
Because
but
this was the,
I've never
the,
seen
the,
it.
This was the first time they had a Winter Love Island.
Exactly. By coincidence.
Yeah, interesting.
Isn't it?
So you're watching that?
So I'm watching that because I didn't watch it because I had better things to do, and now I don't have better things to do. Or I do, but I'm ignoring the better things. And so I'm watching that, and Shauna is with this boy called Callum, and they were having a little bit of a tiff. And then Shauna goes, "Don't listen to respond, listen to understand." And I thought, she's on
don't
something
listen
there.
To respond, listen to understand.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's don't the same be thinking of, in yeah. your head, oh, what am I going to fight back on this? And like, what am I going to say to this? Listen to actually understand someone's point of view, which is, I think, what she's saying.
So it's more of don't make it about me, me, me.
Or just don't.
Is it a case of not making it about?
Yeah, or like don't listen because you want to say someone's wrong. Or don't listen because you want to start speaking. Listen because you actually do want to understand them. Like don't listen passively, listen actively.
But as this privileged white male that I am, if I wanted to comment on Black Lives Matter, basically, should I shut up and just not comment,
because
you
have
said in the past, if you're not black, well,
it's not. It's like I don't think it's hugely your place. So there's a girl on YouTube, and I've forgotten her name, but she does videos about like clothes and makeup and like not particularly sort of politically active like content and stuff. And I saw, I don't watch her videos and I wish I could remember her name, but I can't, but I saw on Twitter that she'd, at the start of all her videos, she gives like 10 minutes to a black person or a person of colour where they are able to talk about their perspective on something or their problems or like one particular issue that they want to raise. And she just introduces it and then she gives them the platform and then she has it back. And like, I think that's a good way to do it, is just saying like, you don't have to be like, oh, I really care, or like, I think this issue is important. You can actually, like, I think that's the best way, is just to give your platform to someone else.
Of course, Ruth, one of the things you could be doing, you know, when you said you've got nothing more important to do, is don't turn your face away. One of the things you could be doing is university work. If you're being,
Talk to me about university work, Dad.
Well, is it the case that they've not provided you with enough stuff? Or?
No, because like, I don't think they did originally. Like, I don't think we really had much work to do or anything. But in fact, we're first year, so it doesn't really matter. But now there's plenty of things that I could be getting on with.
Well, like what? I mean,
like I should be doing vocab and grammar practice, and just like I could be doing like practice essays, probably.
And why aren't you?
I mean,
yeah, I'm not open to any sort of explanation. It's
why does anyone not? Why are you not writing a novel?
Well, I'm not writing. It's a good point. No, I accept the point. I'm not writing a novel because I haven't been commissioned to write. If somebody was to say to me, "We want you to," you needed to. I've got an idea in my head. I've got a hell of a good idea in my head. But
yes, but why are you writing it?
Because there's no deadline, and
yeah, exactly.
I'm not struggling to film a day. In that I've still got a couple of radio shows.
I don't know. So, you know, when you just not, why do you put off doing anything? Just because you just don't do it.
It's true. But can you not put a sort of self-imposed deadline on yourself?
I have an actual imposed deadline, which is the start of university. I should revise.
When are you starting again?
It's like October 1st. Freshers' week is the last week of September.
Right.
I think, and then proper lessons start on October 1st. But I'm being like a helper person for the freshers week.
Oh, you have signed up for that.
So I do have stuff to do that week, so I probably want to be last week of September.
Last week of September, you're back.
So, but I'm going back the 1st of September, going back to uni, because that's when my lease on my house starts.
See, what interests me is that you've, in terms of going back to university, you've done sort of stuff like buying cutlery for your house.
I mean, that's only because Grandma made us go to IKEA.
And you've bought, so you're sort of getting prepared for being in the house with your, is there five or six of you?
There's six of us all together.
Six of you going into a house. So you're getting prepared for that, but not getting prepared for the very important French and Spanish that you would be doing, you'll be doing in class.
I'm not really prepared to move into this house. I have a set of cutlery. That's about as far as my preparations
go. No, I saw some
I've got some
bedding.
Pillars, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's not like, it's not like I'm dedicating loads of time to getting prepared to go into this house.
What about your mattress topper? Because I always remember
my mattress topper was absolutely incredible.
Well, I know
last year.
We had all it this was, when we did the other podcast.
But that's not. It
will
was
that
never
fit
mine.
On your new bed?
No. That's a single bed mattress topper, and I have a double bed this year. And that mattress topper is my cousin's because she had the same thing where she had a single bed in first year, and then so she gave me that. And at this now, no mattress topper.
Well, do you not have to get a mattress topper sorted?
Well, I mean, like at home, I don't have a mattress topper, do I?
You were going on last year about how the mattress topper was the greatest invention since sliced bread.
It was unreal, to be honest. Yeah. And I would like another, but that mattress topper, I think, was like, it's like a memory foam, really chunky one. Like, I doubt I'll get one.
Well, you've not been... See, that's something you could
be... So I'll start a GoFundMe page. GoFundMe a mattress topper.
Well,
a double one as well. That must be expensive.
I've no idea. I've never bought a mattress topper, but...
No, neither.
No. Well, that's something you could be doing, is researching mattress toppers.
From that, how many... I think I've got about 51 days before the lease on my house starts, so that it'll be 50 days of just pure research into mattress toppers. Obviously, yeah. Leaving sort of a week for delivery of the mattress topper. Mm. But like that,
a
mattress...
week for delivery and a day for research for work, university work.
that mattress topper, the one that went on my single bed, was like so big because it came in a big roll. Like that'd be huge if it was for a double bed.
Mm.
Well, it'd be double the size, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's normally the way it works.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Now, something else that interested me about York University, I don't know whether you're probably the person to comment on this, but I know you have a lot of Chinese students at York University, and
yeah.
they rely on the Chinese influx for money. But this struck me as, it was a story I saw in the papers, it struck me as slightly questionable. It's a lot of British universities who, like York, rely on Chinese students.
Mm.
And at the moment, of course, it's digital learning, isn't it? It's all online. And it says here four institutions...
I mean, at the moment, there's no learning going on.
No. Well, it says here four, they're piloting new stuff, but it says four institutions are piloting a new online teaching platform for students in China, which will allow them to continue or start degrees at UK institutions, even if they stay at home in the autumn term because of the pandemic. However, all these materials have to be approved by the Chinese government. So they're getting learning materials, but it's censored. The pilot scheme involves King's College London, Queen Mary University in London, York and
hey.
Southampton. Yes, well, you can say hey, but in a way, you could see this as kowtowing to the Chinese.
Yeah. No, that's wrong. I don't know what I can do about that.
There's not a lot you can do, yeah. except, I suppose, get together with some of your student friends and ask the university what's happening.
I worry that I don't feel strongly enough about anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, set up these, like, societies to fight against things, and I'm like, yeah, it's brilliant, and, like, I hate censorship, and I really disagree with that, but... You know what I mean? Like,
I know
do you
exactly
ever
what you mean.
You just,
yeah,
you
I
just
do.
Don't care enough about anything, really.
Yeah, I do. I'll tell you what. In the past, I used to write travel articles for the Mail on Sunday and various stuff for the Daily Mail. And the guy who at the time was editing what they call the op-ed page. Now, the op-ed page is you've got the editorials, you know, which is the newspaper's opinion on this, that, and the other. And then you have a little section opposite the editorial page where people express strong opinions, you know, so you've got people like David Starkey, the historian, or Peter Hitchens, all famous journalists, put their opinions. And this guy said, how would you like to write? And then, you know, it makes that sort of pitchforks you into the league of being a, you know, an opinion former. I'm talking 20 years ago, maybe now. And he said...
You're not going to be an opinion farmer anymore.
No, not now. Definitely
that
not.
That ship has sailed.
That ship's well sailed. That ship has steamed
out
of the harbour.
Yeah.
However, at that point, he said to me, how do you like to write one of these op-ed columns in the Daily Mail? And I thought, yeah, what a great boost. That. Mm. And I sat down in front of, might have even been this computer, it was the one before this. I sat down in front of my laptop all day trying to engender strong opinions on something, And I really couldn't, you know, maybe one or two football issues I was fairly, but there was nothing that I could, and I thought, no, it's just not me. I'm not one of those people.
Isn't that worrying?
And maybe it is worrying.
What do you do for the rest of your life? Like, you just don't, like, and I see these people, and like, sometimes I don't even agree with them, and they're, like, arguing about stuff. And I think, God, I've never felt like, I will happily debate something with someone, and I like to be knowledgeable, and I like to read about stuff, but I can see these people and they're such passion, and I'm thinking, I've never felt like that.
No.
Never, ever.
Maybe we are just too white privileged. That's what we are.
No, but there's plenty of people who are even more privileged and have it more easy.
There's lots of people more privileged.
No, but you know what I mean? And, yeah. But they do, they still feel like, I just don't know whether I would ever feel passionate enough about something to like
make you could ask, though, couldn't you? When you go back to York University, you could ask, you know, just say to somebody or send an email saying,
but you've got to really want to do it, haven't you?
But I'd like to know, why are they kowtowing to the Chinese? There might be a good reason. Well, I suppose the reason is money, isn't it? And universities.
There you go.
Yeah,
right. Solved,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so that's a worry, really. Because, like, also, like, what do I do for the rest of my life if I don't really want to do particularly anything?
Well, there's always journalism. There's always journalism.
Those who can't do right about it.
Something else that I found quite interesting about universities, we've talked about this subject quite a bit, especially when you were at uni, and that's sexual harassment and all that.
All that.
Yeah, well, a St Andrews University student fraternity. Do you have fraternities in York?
No, but we have rugby social clubs, rugby which social, I think are essentially the same thing.
Same sort of thing. Anyway.
Any sports, so, not girls' ones, but any boys' sports social group is, I think.
Like a fraternity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they're like they are in America, but they've got the same kind of camaraderie and sort of making everyone drink as much as each other.
A St Andrews University student fraternity has suspended several members amid claims that a dozen sexual assaults took place at its society events.
Oh, my God.
The allegations against members of Alpha Epsilon Pi, that's AE Pi.
I didn't know they had these at St Andrews.
Well, at St Andrews, were contained among more than 50 first-hand accounts published on social media about sexual abuse at the university, where, of course, the Duke of Cambridge studied. So I just wondered if it was more...
That's awful.
You read about it at posh universities like St Andrews and Oxford and Cambridge and Durham to an extent, but not so much, you know, you very rarely read about it at Salford or Keele. And I'm just wondering if you felt that this sort of sexual assault culture is more prevalent at the very posh universities, at the St Andrews.
I think that's fair. I think the more you feel privileged and the more you feel, the less you feel like you're going to be caught, the more likely you are to do something. Like, I mean, there's the whole, like, the Bullingdon Club in
Oxford.
And those kids who went, they all went to Eton and Harrow and stuff. And they, there was loads of stuff that was about them and their, like, antics and stuff.
It was mostly, like, sort of taking the mickey out of waiters and people of the lower orders.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of that, but there was a lot of, like, hiring of prostitutes, but it not them not actually being prostitutes. You know, like, lots of stuff like that, which I think is along the same vein as, like, any kind of sexual assault case. And, yeah, I think you don't want to demonise all posh people, because I don't think that's fair, but... I do think there probably is something to say, and like a kind of thing of like the Bullingdon Club, just because I think that's something that people all know and like you've heard of the people, whereas I don't know who these boys who went to St Andrews are. I think one of the things, if you've read the play Posh, there's kind of, I think, like undertones of, because the world that they were brought up in and stuff, and I mean, if you've seen Downton Abbey, it's all about that, like the world that they exist in is disappearing.
Downton
Abbey
is not a documentary, though.
No. But you know, but I'm just saying, like, it's a common concept, which is that, like, where do you fit in after the world that you've been brought up in, or the world that your parents existed in? Like, where do you go in that? And I think one of the things, and it's like, if those usual power constructs that have always been there get taken away from you, then like where does the power then fall to? How do you show that you're superior to someone else when you no longer have servants and you're not going to sit in the House of Lords and like what happens then? So I think there's probably something there, but I don't know.
Shall we lighten it up with a bit of music? I've chosen The Kinks and Autumn Almanac. I know you've heard this before, but now's your opportunity to hear it again. The reason I chose that was to talk about Ray Davies, who's the leader of the Kinks, Sir Raymond Douglas Davies, CBE, born 21st June 1944, often referred to as the godfather of Britpop. I know Damon Albarn, very much influenced by him. You might be interested in his upbringing. He came from Forties Green, North London, which now is quite a middle-class gentrified area, but then was very working class. And probably, with the exception of Lennon McCartney, the best English songwriter of that era. And you've chosen Mahalia. Tell me about Mahalia.
Mahalia, this is the song I Wish I Missed My Ex.
You know I've been waiting for this call. Baby, I don't wanna do this all today. Don't you know you're so predictable? I can tell you everything you're gonna say, like hey or hi. How you been lately?
Fine.
I've been missing you, baby.
Sorry.
I don't know if I can take this again.
Every time the weekend comes.
Did you like it?
I did like it, actually. Mahalia is similar to Georgia Smith.
Yeah. Mm, yeah, well done. Did someone tell you that, or did you say that yourself?
And also Emotional Oranges. No, when I
don't know Emotional Oranges.
When I went onto Spotify to look for Mahalia, I saw that they have that thing.
They're similar to Bar on similar Spotify. Similar to thing. It's so good. Yeah.
So you want to check out Emotional Oranges because they're similar to whoever they are.
So Mahalia, I saw like 3 or 4 years ago when I went to a festival. Yeah, I went to a festival. I don't know. I was about 16, and we saw Mahalia when she was just not very popular at all. Like she was at a smaller festival and stuff. Probably
is she named after Mahalia Jackson?
I have absolutely no idea. But she's really worth listening to, and she's kind of got like her early stuff is actually very different to this. This stuff's a bit more hip hoppy.
I suspect she took the name from Mahalia Jackson, or her parents possibly did, because she was a gospel singer in America, Mahalia Jackson. Really, really, she was described as the single most powerful black woman in the United States, and that would have been during the 1940s, 30s or 40s.
I don't know.
It wouldn't surprise me. Shall we look at the emails?
Yes, let's.
A lot of the emails, a lot of them. David Sharrett simply emailed, "Where's my podcast?" See, it looks like it's a personal thing. He says, Ruth and Martin, I hope you're both keeping well. Another great podcast, please. So he means we enjoyed the last one that we did ages and ages ago. Don't make me start a petition.
Good,
so bless him. Ian Taylor says, hello, Martin and Ruthie. Long-time listener, first-time correspondent and number one fan. Although the expression number one fan is a sort of double-edged sword.
Why is that?
Well, because in the Alan Partridge show on telly, he met his number one fan, who turned out to be more of a stalker than a fan.
Oh, okay.
And,
well, I don't think this guy.
No, of course he's not. And there was The Fan, was a film with Robert De Niro, where I think it was Robert De Niro, but it was certainly The Fan was a film where the number one fan again turned out to be a bit of a stalker, but I'm sure Ian Taylor, well, he definitely isn't, because he says, first time correspondent, one fan. I started at episode 1 after coming across the podcast at episode 7. So he went back to those really early ones that we did under our own steam, really. He says, I'm 57. My daughter is 23, coming on 24. I can relate to very much of what you both talk about, and it saddens me that my daughter doesn't listen, despite my constant attempts to persuade her to listen.
Fair enough.
So it's more or less what you said. No, it's we're appealing to middle-aged males, I think, is what you said. I understand now, after Ruth explaining how she feels when her dad is over-enthusiastic about something. I live in the East Riding of Yorkshire, which says, sounds better than the outskirts of Hull. And my daughter lives in Grimsby with her mother. We were on a trip up to Scotland around March 2018. I was looking forward to re-listening to the first six or seven episodes with my daughter, thus making the journey more pleasurable. With great excitement,
This is awful. The email. This is
with great excitement. I started the first episode, and as soon as Ruth spoke, my daughter said, "I don't like her already." Well, as you can imagine,
everyone dislikes me, and no one dislikes you.
It's odd, isn't it? Well, as you can imagine, I was crestfallen, and the journey was completed with Louise. He says naming and shaming now, but she's not listening anymore. With her earphones in and constantly messaging, Instagramming, etc., while I listened to Talk Sport. You should be having a year abroad, but presumably because that's...
not right now. Mine's not next year, but the year after.
But given that there's been a sort of...
A backlog,
yeah. Will you... Because some people who should have been having it, one assumes...
I think there's talk of moving my year abroad to my final year of uni.
Yeah.
But...
Would that make sense?
I think so, yeah. I suppose... It would mean you'd have to do all your assessments and stuff before you'd actually lived in the country, so I assume your like language levels wouldn't be as good. But it would mean that I would get to do my third year with the people who I'm friends with now, apart from obviously the people who also do languages, but the people who don't do a four-year course, I would get to do another year with them. But I don't know, I think it's all very much up in the air.
Now, this is stating the obvious, really. Students' satisfaction with universities has declined for the first time in 3 years.
I think that would have happened anyway, just because of all those strikes.
Well, it says here, after lecturer strikes were followed by the coronavirus pandemic, so it couldn't really have been worse. It says their mental health, far worse than other young people their age, has deteriorated sharply.
That's not good, is it?
No, in the past year. Only 11% were satisfied with their life, compared with 27% of young people overall. Experts fear this could worsen next year when the student experience will be drastically different. That's the problem, isn't it? As long as, until there's a vaccine, it's not going to be like university. It's not going to be like it was when you started.
No.
Anybody said anything about what it might be like next year?
Well, just that the same thing that I think everyone's always suspected is that lectures are going to be online and all the other teaching done face to face. But I mean, I've said it before, but like, it's not, university is not solely about the teaching, is it?
Certainly not the way you've been doing it.
No, but you know, like for anyone would say that it's. And I think universities would be kidding themselves if they say they can give a similar experience, because I think lectures being online will not make people's experience very different at all, because a lecture, you literally do sit there, listen and take notes, like that's no different. But it's all the other stuff and societies and sports and all that kind of thing.
Something else we've talked about, cancel culture. I'm not sure we've done it here, but we've talked about it in the fact that J.K. Rowling is getting all sorts of problems on Twitter and social networks and all that. I'm a big fan of J.K. Rowling, not the writing so much, but the fact that she did it, you know, she pulled us...
I don't know why you say that. She shouldn't have said anything like what she said.
Well, what did she say? She was mildly sarcastic.
No, it's not just that one tweet, though, either. And she liked loads of things that were, like, very anti... they're very transphobic. And her the pseudonym that she takes for her books, the male... Is it a man's male?
Yeah.
She does for her, like, crime
detective
thriller.
Detective books, yeah.
Those books, the name is of, like, a trans... exclusionary.
Is it? Are you sure people
Who like believes in... Yeah, no, it definitely is.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling's pseudonym that she does for a detective is Robert Galbraith.
Yeah, so
nobody even said anything about that.
No, but I'm just saying...
And we've
like,
had to Google it.
It says that it's a coincidence. I mean, maybe it is just a very unfortunate coincidence, but you'd think someone as big as J.K. Rowling would search every...
You wouldn't necessarily... I mean, what it says on Twitter or on the internet here is J.K. Rowling's pen name is also the name of an anti-LGBTQ+ conversion therapist. It's very likely a coincidence, but Rowling has yet to comment on the unfortunate connection. I don't blame her. Why should she comment?
Yeah, I suppose, but there is a lot of stuff that she has said. And I mean, Daniel Radcliffe wrote that article that said, you know, he disagrees completely with the stuff that she's saying. And like, I don't think it should be taken lightly. And it has, like... And people have been talking about how it's really ruined the books for them if they are trans and stuff.
Yeah, well, they're adults. They shouldn't be reading kids' books.
No,
anyway.
There's plenty of children who are trans as well, Bob.
Yes, but I don't know whether the Harry Potter generation tend to be largely millennials.
Yeah, but you still then start to read them. They don't. Mm. The books don't disappear. It's not like, oh, you missed out because you're not part of the generation. Like, people start to read them when they're 10 years old or whatever.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I bet the people who are whinging about Harry Potter books tend to be people who've grown up with them.
Yeah, probably too, but it's like it's a really special thing if you've grown up with it.
But and like, as she's given the word,
it'd be for me.
Because you don't agree with some of her opinions.
It'd be the equivalent if Jacqueline Wilson came out as a massive bigot.
She's a member of the Nazi Party.
No, but it would be the same. Like, it
well,
would,
I know it's just hard lines. There are the books. There's
a conversation
with Woody Allen.
That. I know.
There are the books. There's what.
Yeah,
no,
I think that's
are.
Fine. But I'm just saying that, like, I don't think she had any right to say what she said. It's not an opinion either, really. If it's disagreeing with, like, the fact that someone has the right...
I mean, she's saying people shouldn't be trans. She said the exact opposite. She said she's great...
Yeah, I suppose. I don't want to get into it.
No. Is that another thing that you don't really care about enough to get into?
I do care, probably don't know enough about it.
I'm trying to find stuff that's uplifting in all the stuff I'm reading about students and people your age in lockdown. And I'm just looking at a headline here, which you're looking over and see. Students lose offers of jobs and internships. More bad news for you. Almost a third of students in their final year at university...
Looking for good news in newspapers or on Twitter or on the TV news at the moment is like... Looking for a needle and a haystack.
Is there any good news when you're talking to your friends and all that, or are you all a bit...
Not really, no. Good news. Not like... There's no global good news.
There's not a lot of global... Well, there will be.
But they're like individual stories. There's not like a global upturn.
So, nothing funny to finish the podcast with? A message of hope for your many fans?
Not really. Just, you know... What did Gemma Collins say? She said, like... Yeah, it's tough. It's tough out there. Keep on washing the hands, you know, Corona. And that was just it. That was the whole quote.
Good. Well, that's a message from you then. It's tough out there.
Keep on washing the hands.
Keep on washing the hands, Corona.
Yeah.